We have a couple of healing stories that have a lot of things in common. In the first reading, Naaman is a Syrian. He's a foreigner. In the gospel, the Samaritan is a foreigner. There's a crossing of boundaries here, a crossing of religions, all kinds of crossover and conversion and healing, wholeness, all those kinds of things are very much at play here. So if you back up a few lines in that story from the second book of Kings, Naaman was a general in the Syrian army. Now Syria was an enemy of Israel, and they were one of the superpowers of the day who were subjugating Israel. So you hate the superpower, you hate the oppressor. And the oppressor feels kind of superior to the vassal state. So Naaman is high up in the governance of that empire, and he contracts leprosy. Well, there was no known cure for leprosy, but he had been to doctors and he had been to the prophets of Syria and he had tried everything that he could come up with and to no avail. And so some of his servants told him about a prophet of God in Israel named Elisha who might be able to cure him. And he says, in Israel? Oh, please. I'm not going to go to Israel and contact one of their prophets. If none of the prophets in Syria can take care of this, nobody in Israel can. But they say to him, well, but you're desperate. You've tried everything. What could it hurt to give this a try? So he travels across the border. He goes all the way to Israel, and he finds Elisha, and he asks Elisha to cure him. And so Elisha, whose heart is open to a foreigner, to a Gentile, to a pagan, he says, go and wash in the Jordan 7 times. And the Syrian's response is, we have far greater rivers than this in Syria. The Jordan is a creek, it's not really a river. And he says, why should I wash in this mud hole when I've got real rivers in Syria to wash in? And his servants say, but you've come all this way, give it a try, what's it going to hurt? And so he goes and washes himself, and he is completely cured. His flesh becomes like that of a little child. He's rejuvenated, rechilded, physically, spiritually, he's converted. He has a spiritual conversion as well as a physical conversion. So he goes back to Elisha, and he wants to offer him a gift of gratitude. And twice, Elisha refuses the gift, because you cannot buy God. You cannot purchase grace. It's a free gift. And so he says, well then, allow me to take 2 wagon loads of earth back to Syria so that I can build an altar there to God, because I am no longer going to worship any god on earth except the God of Israel. So the earth crosses the boundaries too. The two nations kind of become one. It's reconciliation of communities, it's reconciliation and healing, it's conversion. So in the gospel then, 10 lepers are cured by Jesus. Jesus is the one who has crossed the ultimate boundary. He has come from heaven to earth. He has come from divinity to humanity. He's closing off the boundaries, the distance, the separation, because Jesus is all about communion. He is the fullness of divinity and the fullness of humanity in one body. He's all about bringing together. And so he cures 10 people, one of whom happens to be a foreigner, a Samaritan, hated by Jews. And so he tells them, go and show yourself to the priests. Because in those days in Israel, the only cures allowed were the ones done by the priests. And so if he's going to restore these lepers to community, and let's back up a minute here. Leprosy was considered in those days to be highly contagious. Turns out it wasn't, but they thought that it was highly contagious. And so lepers had to live apart in leper colonies. They were not allowed to go into the towns and villages. They were considered impure. They would never be allowed to enter into the temple. So they're ostracized from the community, from the religion, even from their own families. This is about separation par excellence. And Jesus, the great connector, the communion between heaven and earth, between God and humanity, heals them and restores them to the community. Now, so that the community will trust that their healing is complete and they won't be afraid of them, so they rejoin to their community, they go through the ritual, go to the priest, present themselves, let the priest think that they cured you, you know, let's play this game so that everyone will be comfortable and you'll be restored to the community. But the Samaritan returns to Jesus giving thanks. Is it because the other two weren't thankful? I mean, the other nine? No, I think they probably were. But they had to go through this because of Jewish law. The Samaritan was not bound by Jewish law. So he doesn't have to go through all that ritual to be repurified. He isn't interested in going to the temple anyway. Why does he care? So he comes back and gives thanks. Now, this is in Luke's gospel. Luke is a disciple of Paul. He was a secretary to Paul on a couple of Paul's journeys. Paul, you might recall, has this kind of affinity for the law. He says, you're saved by faith, not by the law. And so Luke, who is, you know, very much in the same line of thinking, and he's writing his gospel to Gentile Christians, not to Jewish Christians. And so he wants them to accept the idea that they are saved by faith, that they don't have to become Jews first, they don't have to follow the dietary laws, they don't have to follow all these minutiae of legal systems and everything. They can come directly to Christ by faith. And so what does Jesus say to this Samaritan who comes back and gives him thanks? Go your way. Your faith has saved you. Not the law. The other nine had to go get saved by the law. You get saved by faith. Luke loves to stick that knife in and turn it. Okay? Remember the story of the Good Samaritan? Three people come by this man left for dead by the roadside. And the priest and the Levite pass by first, and they pass by on the other side of the road. They won't even look over there. Is that because they're bad people? No. Luke's point is, they would be, if they went too close to a dead body, to a corpse, that would give them ritual impurity. And they both have duties at the temple, and they have to get on their way and do that. If they got impurified, then they would have to go through elaborate ablutions and it would take too much time and everything. And so they're just following the law. They're not evil people. They're following the law. And so they can't help this guy. But the Samaritan isn't bound by the law. So he walks over to the other side of the road to see if he's alive or dead, finds out he's alive, picks him up, takes care of him, all that kind of stuff. He becomes Christ to that man. And this is all about becoming Christ. It's all about becoming connectors, people in communion, about dissolving the boundaries and the distances and the disconnections, and bringing people together, restoring people to the community, restoring people to wholeness, restoring people to their divine origins and their divine destiny. We come from unity. Three distinct persons in God, but so united in love that they are one God. And everything emanates out from that in creation, and so there's all kinds of difference. We can't even count all the different species of plants and animals on the earth. We can't count the stars or the solar systems. We can't count the galaxies, and yet it's all one in God. And so our goal, our destiny and our duty as Christians is to bring things together, to celebrate unity, to recognize unity, and to try to bring that about. And so one of the ways we do that is here in the liturgy. This is about thanksgiving. This is about recognizing what God has done for us. This is about recognizing the eternal destiny that God has in store for his creation and giving thanks for it, being grateful. And Eucharist means to give thanks. And so there is no higher form of prayer that we Christians can do than what we're doing right now. And so we have the great prayer of praise and thanksgiving called the Eucharistic prayer. And we're going to sing that in a minute. And this is about being Christ, coming to the memory of what he has done for us, being grateful for it, and giving ourselves back. You know, faith is receiving the gift of life and love from God and giving it back, responding in kind. God has offered his life for us on the cross, and he expects nothing less of us in return. And so one of the things we do here every Sunday at Mass is we practice ritually dying, giving ourselves back to God without any conditions or reservations, returning the gift, receiving it and returning the gift. That's what Christian life is all about. That's what we're doing here now. That's our eternal destiny, to be what Christ was in the body of Jesus, the fullness of humanity in communion, absolute communion with the fullness of divinity. And so in us, our destiny is to be an absolute communion of divine and human life in one person.